Thank you for watching Exchange TV. This current series, I Choose the Fruit of Grace, is all about how we can choose to live in the goodness of what God has already put in us. So prepare your heart to be blessed today. Prepare your heart to be encouraged with this incredible message of God's love.
Started a series called I Choose the Fruit of Grace, and I was listening up to the guys, Gary and Adam, and it's been fantastic, you know, the message that they've brought, and what's really stuck in my head was what Gary said, love is the root of the fruit. I can't get that out of my head. It's amazing. So, peace is the subject of the talk today. We've reached the third fruit, and peace is something we hear a lot about in this country. There's barely a day goes by in Northern Ireland, we can't switch on the news on the telly. You switch on the radio. For those of you that inflict Nolan or whatever else upon yourselves, if you go on social media or whatever, we hear something about peace in Northern Ireland. But what we're going to discover today is that from the Bible, what peace is really all about and how it can actually transform your life for the better. But before we get into talking about peace, I want to talk about the context here. This series of fruits and that is based on the passage in Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But we need to understand something about Galatia and what was going on there. So what I've got is I've actually got a wee bit of an experiment to start off with. So we're going to do a bit of chemistry. All right? I've always got something. Paul went to Galatia on his first missionary trip with his pal Barnabas. And we'll talk a wee bit more about Galatia in a minute. But Paul brought the message of grace. So the message of grace is symbolized by this water. So we'll pour it in the cup. So Paul brought the message of grace. However, there was a problem in Galatia which prompted Paul to write a letter. There were people who were saying, grace isn't good enough. You've got to do X, Y, Z on top of that. So what I've got here is some oil. No chance. So, can anybody tell me what has happened here? They're separated. They're not what? They're not mixing. The old chemists, the scientists, have a really fancy word for that. It's called immiscible, where two liquids don't mix. Oil and water don't mix. And this is what was going on in Galatia, because the message of grace and the message of law were set against one another. At this level here, we have the message of grace. At this level here, marked by the oil, we have the message of law. So we have grace versus law. We have faith versus works. We have liberty versus legalism. We have sonship versus slavery. And we have the fruit of the Spirit against the desires of the works of the flesh. The two things were not mixing. And we'll talk a wee bit more about the background in a wee second. But this is the root of why Paul was writing his letter to the church at Galatia. There was a problem there and he wanted to address it. I'll set this down away from the electrics. So that's something of the background. There was a jarring of these two messages. And it's the background of the context to the letter, the clash between grace and law. Galatia itself is a province in what was now Turkey. If you think of Turkey, the country, and if you draw a sort of stripe down the middle of it, that's sort of where Galatia was. It stretched from the Black Sea in the north to the Mediterranean Sea in the south, a stripe down through the country. It was a Roman province. And as I said, Paul and Barnabas made their first missionary trip there via Cyprus in Acts 13 and 14. They visited Antioch and Pisidia, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, and brought the good news of God's saving grace to the people there. And the people wholeheartedly responded as they did so. Now, if you've got your Bible there with you, or you've got your iPhone, your iPad, get it out, right? And turn up to Acts chapter 13, because we're going to look at a few passages here in relation to that. And I'll give you a flavor of why or what was going on. So Acts chapter 13, and if you go to verse 42. Now, Paul had come in, and his modus operandi was starting in the synagogues and work out from there. So he brought the message of grace in the synagogues. And the first port was Antioch and Pisidia and Galatia. So Acts 13, verse 42 reads this. As they went out, the people begged that these things might be told them the next Sabbath. And after the meeting of the synagogue broke up, many Jews and devout converts to Judaism followed Paul and Barnabas, who, as they spoke with them, urged them to continue in the grace of God. The next Sabbath, almost the whole city gathered to hear the word of the Lord. But when the Jews saw the crowds, they were filled with jealousy and began to contradict what was spoken by Paul. That's in Antioch and Pisidia. Scoot on there to verse 50. But the Jews incited the devout women of high standing and the leading men of the city, stirred up persecution against Paul and Barnabas, and drove them out of their district. Again, Antioch and Pisidia. Scoot on a bit further, Acts 14, verse 1. Now at Iconium, they entered together into the Jewish synagogue and spoke in such a way that a great number of both Jews and Greeks believed, but the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers in Iconium. And actually, if you go on to read further on down, they went to a place called Lystra, and they actually stoned Paul, dragged him outside the city, stoned him and left him for dead. Because of what they were telling the people. But Paul and Barnabas sought still to encourage those new believers on the message of grace before they returned back to their base in Antioch in Syria further south. So the seeds for the reason for the letter to the Galatians were already being sown whilst Paul and Barnabas were there. He just didn't write it off the hoof. It was because of what was going on, and then further word, of course, had it got to him. And Galatians, in many ways, is a very strongly worded letter. And it's an indication of how passionate Paul was about the message of grace and how exasperated and almost, you could say, angry he was with what was going on there in the Galatian church amongst the new believers. And the fifth and sixth chapter of Paul's letter to the Galatians exhorts the believers to live a free life, under the guidance of the Spirit of God. And it's from this section of Galatians we're talking about, these various fruits of grace. So Galatians 5, 22, 23, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no what? No law. No law. You know, I reflected on these verses this morning that we just read out of Acts 13 and 14. And I thought, how similar to the situation of Jesus. How similar. Jesus walked in Jerusalem one Sunday or one Sabbath, and the people were lauding him because he had raised Lazarus not from the dead. By the next week, the Jews had poisoned people's mind. The Sanhedrin had turned against him. They got jealous against him. We want rid of this guy. And this is just a reflection of what was going on there in Jerusalem with Jesus, only it was in Galatia with the new believing church. So we want to look at the subject of peace this morning. Peace is positive. Peace is positive. Sounds like a real strange thing to say. Well, of course, when you muppet, peace is positive. You know, everybody sees peace as positive. Peace is a good thing. Peace is a great thing, yes. You know, but we want world peace. It's a good thing. But to understand what I'm getting at here, we need to go back to the Greek word which Paul used when he was writing this letter, because he wrote the letter in Greek. But first, let me ask you to reflect on what you think the word peace means. When I said the word peace, what was it that came into your head? What did you think about? What's the first thing that came into your mind? You know, I'd hazard a guess the first thing that came into your head was the absence of war, the absence of conflict, the absence of harassment, the absence of unrest. And if you did, you're not alone. Because if I took a camera and I went into the middle of Belfast there, into Victoria Shopping Centre, into Castle Court, and I shoved the mic under people's noses and I said, what does peace mean? They'll probably say the same thing. The absence of war, the absence of conflict, the absence of unrest. And even if you look up in the dictionary, that definition's there as well. For instance, if Vernon puts the picture up on the screen, we have recently had leave to say in Belfast that the 12th, we had peace on the 12th. All the marching and whatnot that goes on here on the 12th of July with the Orange Orders and so forth, there was peace compared to previous years. And what we're actually talking about, what we are actually saying there, there was an absence of conflict. There was an absence of conflict, and particularly in relation to up out there at the Crumlin Road, Twaddell Avenue, or down shops in that particular area, because that's the big bone of contention here at the minute. And there was peace, people say. But what we're really saying was there was no violence. Let me ask you another question. How many of you have ever sat in the house and everything's been going on and you just said, "Will you give my head peace?" Hands up if you said that. We have some truthful people here. Or has even gone round in your head. Will you give my head peace? What we're actually saying is, will you stop? Will you pipe down? Will you be quiet? Will you stop harassing or mithering me? And even Kathy, bless her, this morning, Kathy was getting up doing her Proverbs 31 wifey bit and was going into the kitchen. I got up early this morning to read and read through my message and to pray and so on and so forth. And Kathy got up shortly after me. Next thing I hear, all this buzzing and activity and that from the kitchen. Whatnot, just busy making something. And she came into the living room and said, "Do you want me to shut this door so I can give you some peace?" And I said, "That's funny," because she knew what I was talking about, and I started to laugh. And I said, I mean, some quietness, that's what I want to give you. So what we're saying is the absence of something. So when Kathy's closing the door, there's absence of noise and so on and so forth. So that's, in common usage, that's what we understand, or what people understand what peace is all about. It's the absence of something. It means something is not happening. But you know what? That is not the meaning of the word peace in the Bible. And it's certainly not the meaning of the word that Paul uses for peace. You see, the word that Paul uses for peace is the Greek word irene. I love this word simply because of the fact my mum's name's Erin. And Erin means peace. And this is where Erin comes from. Irene. The word irene, which is a noun, which, back to English, we've done our chemistry lesson, we're now back to English. Person, place, or thing. Means set at one, at rest, quietness, prosperity, harmony, or tranquility. And it's quite similar in many ways to the old Hebrew word shalom. Shalom. And that was used by the old Hebrews as a form of greeting or a form of farewell. So picture in your mind's eye an old dusty town. Two Hebrews come up and meet each other. One sticks his hand out to the other and he says, "Shalom. Shalom." The guy on the other side, "Shalom. Shalom." What are they actually saying? What are they actually saying to one another? What they're not actually saying, "Listen, mate, hope you're safe enough today. I hope you're all right. And I hope you don't have any bother. Hope you don't have any problems." That's not what they're saying. What they're actually doing is tantamount to proclaiming a blessing over the person that they're meeting. What they are actually saying is, "May you be prosperous. May you be well. May you be whole. May you be tranquil. May your relationships, both in business and family, be good ones." And that's wrapped up in the word shalom. So the word irene, meaning peace, used here in the Bible, is a positive statement conferring the presence of something in someone's life. Therefore, peace is positive. It's positive. But it's more than that. Peace is primary. It's primary. You see, whilst shalom is a reflection of what the word irene means, irene actually means a lot more than what shalom does. It means a lot more than what shalom does. We have a dog. We have a dog. His name's Max. And we love him to bits. And here he is in his element. Wee photo of him running, enjoying himself at the beach. I think that was taken up in Castle Rock in the north of Northern Ireland. So a lot of our life is actually planned around Max. And even our recent holiday to Wales was planned around Max. We had to find a beach long enough and whatnot that we could let him off on, area that was dog friendly, etc., etc., etc. So Max is a big part of our life. And Kathy, sometimes when she goes out shopping, will come back with something new for Max to play with. And my heart sinks, absolutely sinks, when something like this is brought in. Something like this. Well, why does my heart sink? Because Max gets excited. His wee tail starts to go a dinger. And Kathy Gisson at high school, she for a while is super mum. You know, here Max, here you go, here's a new toy. And my heart sinks when this is produced. Because when Max gets this toy, all I then hear is... And strangely, it always seems to happen when there's rugby on the TV or Top Gear or something like that. Never seems to happen when there's some cookery program or something on, when all you hear is... And as you can appreciate, you, after a while, it gets a bit on the old nerves, the old banger reserves, so it goes. Now, the reason why the toy makes the noise is when Max bites into it, he's putting pressure on it. And the pressure... We're now into physics, by the way. The pressure forces the air out. The pressure forces the air out. But that's not the end of it. Because when Max decides to let go, the air pressure tries to equalize and it rushes back in. And so, on and on and on it goes. It does get annoying, but I think you get the point. Why does this toy make that noise? This toy makes that noise because the air is out of equilibrium. It's out of equilibrium. It's out of equilibrium. And it reminds me of our lives. When we were unbelievers, sin made us be out of equilibrium with God. To be out of step with God, to be out of sync with God, to be out of right relationship with God. And it was not the way that God had intended it to be. If you go back to Genesis chapter 1, when God created the heavens and the earth and everything in it, and culminated it by making us the pinnacle of his creation, made in his image, we get to the Mr. Kipling verse in Genesis 1 at the very end, I think it's verse 30, 31. And God says, looked at everything, he says, everything is very good. That word very there actually means exceedingly good. Exceedingly good. We know Mr. Kipling makes exceedingly good cakes. Well, that was the Mr. Kipling verse, exceedingly good. But sin came into the world and there was an imbalance. And it's hard to live with. And as unbelievers, that was our state. No matter how hard we tried, there's nothing we can do to change it ourselves to stop it. Folks, the only way to achieve peace in life, to achieve that equilibrium, to achieve that balance, is through an encounter with Jesus Christ. And that is why peace is primary. Believing in him, turning away from sin, and believing in him is the only way to achieve it. It is the only thing that is going to deal with the sin in our lives and stop this and give peace. Peace is primary. The presence of God Almighty in our lives. Peace is primary. You know, the Bible says Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace. The prophet Isaiah in chapter 9, verse 6, this verse is read every Christmas for anybody who goes to a traditional Christmas service. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and what? Prince of Peace. Prince of Peace. He is the Lord of Peace. Paul writing to the church in Thessalonia, 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 16. Says this, now may the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times in every way. And the message that you can be restored in right relationship with God through Jesus' finished work on the cross and go on to live a life that is full and that is blessed is the gospel of peace. Ephesians 6, verse 15, as for the shoes on your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. Peace is primary. The word irene is used 92 times as a whole in the New Testament. It's central to our understanding of what happens in our lives when we believe in Jesus Christ, when we turn our back on sin, when we have that metanoia that Andrew has been talking about in previous months, when we turn around, believe in Jesus and his message, we are no longer opposed to God, but rather we are restored in a right relationship with him by being made new, as Andrew has already said today, from the inside out. That is the way grace works, from the inside out. Therefore, Paul writes in Romans 5, verse 1, since we have been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. God is the source of peace. Peace needs to be primary in our lives. And can I encourage any of you that are here this morning? Maybe you're not a believer. You've not had an encounter with Jesus Christ. Maybe you're listening to this message on the internet. Maybe you're watching it, the video online via the website. If you have not had an encounter with Jesus Christ, if you want to experience what real peace is all about, put your trust in him. Turn round, and for the peace of God is his promise. It's his presence inside us, and it's his power indwelling in us within our hearts. So we understand what peace is. Peace is positive. Peace is something in us, and peace is actually God dwelling within us. So that's the biblical understanding of what peace actually is. The third thing, peace is prevalent. Peace is prevalent. The word prevalent means widespread in a particular area or at a particular time. You know, as believers, we are at peace with God. No squeaking for us. We are at peace with God. But this peace that we experience in our relationship with God, which dwells within us, this should be flowing out of our lives because it's one of the hallmarks of the life of a true believer. One of the hallmarks. And we need to choose. We always need to choose the path of peace. Where do we need to choose the path of peace? Well, first of all, in church. Paul, again writing in the Ephesians, says, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. We need to be at peace in church. We need to choose peace. We need to choose peace in our relationships with one another. Paul writing to the Romans, Romans 14, verse 19. So then let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. It is a choice we make. It's a choice we make. We're all different. We're all different personalities. We're all different skills and abilities and all the rest. And we're all together in church. And yeah, you know what? Sometimes you might find a person that you wouldn't naturally get along well with. But you have to choose the pathway of peace. Choose the pathway of peace and what makes for mutual upbuilding. It's core to life at church. And we need to choose peace in the world. Need to choose peace in the world. Romans 12, 18. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Live peaceably with all. Do you know what? Sometimes people don't want to live at peace with you. They don't want peace. How many people in their families, in their work, amongst friendship groups or whatever, find something, or amongst their neighbours, suddenly there's some unrest, there's some difficulty, and there's a lack of peace. It's nothing you've done. Something has just happened, and it's like a switch, boom, peace has disappeared from the scene. I want to share with you something. Before we came to Exchange Church, Kathy and I went through a very difficult period with our neighbours, a very difficult period with our neighbours. Not because of anything we done, but we had a very difficult time. A very difficult time. We had the car tires burst 5 or 6 times. We had several attempts made to hurt the dog. My wife, Kathy, was verbally abused on the street, and we had to get the police and that involved. Now, as each thing happened, my anger level, as you can imagine, started to increase. And I really felt sometimes like taking the situation into my own hands and sorting it out my way. But Kathy, in her wisdom, says, Wayne, in all of this, we know where the source of this is really coming from, and we need to walk out of this with clean hands. And I thought about that, and then we got the proper authorities and whatnot involved, but the temptation was there to do take something into my own hands. But I avoided it. And do you know what? I reflected on that. I was not going to have the actions of somebody, someone else, someone round about us who is affecting our lives, affect my future relationship and life with God. God has a plan. He has a promise for my life. And I'm not going to let somebody wreck that by me making a bad choice, by being goaded or provoked into a bad choice. Because let's face it, sometimes those are the situations that we face. But we have to make the choice to live peaceably with all. Sometimes things may happen. You may need to get the authorities not involved. That's okay. That's what they're there for. And you use them for that. But as far as is possible with you, choose the pathway of peace. You know what? And I thank God that Kathy and I did that. Because God has still got, he's got great plans for me. And I'm heading towards those plans. I'm walking into them, what he has for me. And I'm not going to let the devil get in the way of that, whether he uses my neighbours or whoever else. But I have to choose the pathway of peace. When I say peace is prevalent, prevalent also has a deeper meaning because of the Latin word from which it was derived. The original meaning of the Latin word was having greater power. That's the original context of the word prevalent. I want to share with you another story. I like to go for walks with Max. I like to take him out for walks. And there's an area near our home on the North Down Coastal Path. And we can go there, and he enjoys running about. And it's between Sea Hill and Grays Point. And the reason why I like going there is because there's not many people around. The dog's not going to bother anybody. He can run about, get all his exercise, and I get plenty of time to think, and I get time to pray, and get time to think about my relationship with God and various situations in life, what God wants maybe me to do or us as a couple. One night, I was walking along the path. And again, this is before we came to Exchange. And I tend to go out regardless of the weather. So if it's blowing up a gale or whatever, it doesn't really matter. I'll go out anyway. Sometimes, actually, I prefer that because it means there's even less people about. I'm not really antisocial, don't worry. I hope I'm not putting that impression across. But sometimes it's just nice when you've everything coming in on you just to get a bit of space. And that's where I get it. I call it my man, dog, God walks. So one night I was walking along the path, I think it was in the autumn, and the sun was setting over the distant hills, but the wind was blowing up a storm. It was blowing up a storm. It wasn't raining or anything, but it was very blustery, and it was affecting Belfast Lock, which was very, very choppy. You know, when I reached the point along the walk right, I said, look, I'm just going to sit down here, take a seat in one of the benches while Max run around and did doggy stuff. And I noticed as I was sitting down, and I heard this, even above the wind, I could hear this putt, 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 putt noise. It would stop for a bit, and then putt, 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 putt. I thought, what on earth is that? What on earth is that? And I looked out, and just around the rocks in the corner came this wee, small boat. It was no bigger, really, than a rowing boat, and it had this wee wheelhouse and that at the front, the engine. And because the sea and the lock was so choppy, this wee thing was bouncing about all over the place. And the two guys on it were doing all they could do to stand up straight, bouncing about all over the shop, up and down vigorously in the water. And I watched them for a bit as they were going along. And then out of the corner of my eye, if I stick the next picture up there, I noticed the Belfast Dunfermline ferry coming up. Same water, same wind, same vigorous waves. And this thing looked massive compared to this wee thing. It was like, you know, just huge compared to this wee boat. I couldn't help but notice the contrast between the two. This wee boat was bouncing about all over the shop, and this big ferry was just calmly proceeding up through the lock. Probably the passengers on board didn't really even notice it was that rough because of the size of the ship. So I looked at the contrast of this ferry and this wee boat. And in that moment, God spoke to me very, very clearly. I felt he said that, Wayne, I know you don't want to waste your life, as it were, bobbing around in the shallows here near the shore, being shook around by everything in your life, just like that wee boat. Things come your way and you'll be shook about all over the place. I know you desire in your heart to go out into the deep. I know you desire to go out into the deep on a journey with me. And just like that large ship, you want to go out to sea. It'll be a great adventure. And I want you to know that although there will be rough waters ahead, although there will be difficulties ahead and there will be rough in places, I will be with you and we will make it through. We will make it through. There will be good days and bad, but I am with you and we will make it through. And my mind was taken back to the image in Mark chapter 4 of Jesus and the disciples in the boat. Do you remember during the storm? The disciples were all in the boat. A storm had whipped up in the Lake of Galilee. The boat was being battered by the waves and Jesus was lying sleeping. The disciples couldn't get their head around this and they were afraid of what was going on round about. And eventually, Jesus woke up. They woke Jesus up and he said, "Peace be still." And then it's almost like they were afraid of Jesus because he had the power over the storm. The point that I'm trying to make here is, see, no matter what storms you face in life, with Jesus in the boat, you don't need to worry about it. You don't need to spend hours and hours of your time worrying about it. Because with Jesus in the boat, with God in your heart, with God implanted in your life, you can face whatever comes your way because he will give you the power to do that. He will enable you to be able to do that. What are your difficulties? Financial? 1 week after payday, you look at the bank account or open the wallet or purse, you wonder, how am I going to get through the next 3 weeks? Maybe it's relational things in the family. You know, things have happened and you're wondering, where is this going to go? Maybe it's in your own life. You're, as Andrew was speaking earlier on, you know, you feel God has spoken to you. There's this great plan ahead for you and that. And all you can see round about you is the storms. Well, you need to get your focus off the storms and get your focus onto God who is implanted in your life. God is implanted in your life.